And welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Trevor Anderson here, chart manager at Billboard, and joined as always by my seasoned colleague,
Gary Trust, Billboard's senior director of charts.
Seasoned? Yeah, I think seasoned is an appropriate word. Look, there are a lot of words out there that would apply to you, Gary. I think seasoned, we'll take seasoned in particular, because seasoned is the name of the game this week when we're talking holiday charts. Yeah. The Holiday 100 is back in action. We went up to the old chart attic, dusted it off, brought it back down, or setting it up, keeping the kids and the dog away from it. And we have it nice, ready, and with Mariah Carey on top, no surprise there, ready for you for the 2018 edition.
Yep, the Billboard Holiday 100 chart is back. We have lots of charts every week, but I feel like we really, really have lots of charts this week.
Yeah, of course, in addition to your weekly dose of the regular Hot 100, we've also got the year's biggest hits for you. Scope of last December all the way to right before Thanksgiving. We have got 2018's biggest hits, so we'll run through those as well. Hope you're a fan of Drake, because he will feature pretty prominently, as I'm sure everyone who's been watching the charts and listening to the show and existing in the world in 2018 probably already knows.
Yeah, so we're going to talk that. We're also going to talk more holiday music. We're going to bring in a couple friends from Nielsen and really get into why so many radio stations go all holiday music this time of year. Maybe what new holiday songs you might be hearing going forward more often. As streaming gets bigger, it's a new way of research that radio can use. So in addition to all the classics, maybe going forward, there's going to be some newer songs that will be part of holiday playlists each year going forward. So we'll get into that as well.
All right. So we've got this week, we've got this season, we've got this year. Let's get started on the main action just in the past 7 days. Here is this week's top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Can't take back the love that I gave you. It's to the point why I love and I hate you, and I cannot change you, so I must replace you.
Number 9.
Do what I want when I come through. I need you like you, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Number 8.
Off this way, doing all these shows. I've been on the road, I don't care where I go, long as I get paid. She been on my mind, soon as I get back.
Number 7.
Swear to turn Atlantic. Night calling in a phantom. Told them, hold it, don't you panic. Took an island, felt the mansion. Drop the roof, more expansion. Drive a coupe, you can stand it.
Number 6. Number 5. Number 4. Number
3.
Number
2.
And number 1.
I hit the FBO with duffels in my hands. Woo. I did half a Xan, 13 hours till I land. Had me out like a light, like a light.
And
like a
what do you know? There's a new number 1 in town on the Billboard Hot 100. That is Travis Scott's Sicko Mode. And it's a song that previously it had 4 weeks at number 2. People were eyeing it for a while ever since Astroworld came out. If that would be the song that could get Travis to his very first career at number 1 on the Hot 100, and check that off the list, it does! So, Sicko Mode dethroning Ariana Grande's Thank You Next after Ariana had spent 3 weeks on top. I'm sure everyone is very much aware that the odds of Ariana returning to number 1 next week are very, 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 very strong. Because the music video for Thank You Next came out last Friday. Somebody in the camp realized, I guess pretty smartly, that Friday is the beginning of the streaming tracking week. So all 7 days of that video's activity are going to go into the chart next week. If you haven't seen the clip by now, I mean, it's blown up. It broke Vivo and YouTube records for most views in 24 hours, you know, parodies, a lot of 2000s films that, you know, people know and love, Mean Girls, Legally Blonde, Bring It On, 13 Going on 30. Some of the actors from the films are actually in the video as well. So just, you know, if you wanted a big pop culture kind of crossover music video, this was definitely the one.
Yeah, so next week, might go back to number one. Probably a good chance. We haven't looked at all the data yet, but broken records on YouTube and Vivo for 24-hour streams for Thank You Next. So seems like a pretty safe bet that Ariana will go back to number one next week. But yeah, this week, Travis Scott is first number one. Obviously, you hear Drake on the song. Skrillex, the remix that he did, came out in the tracking week. So that gave it a boost as well. Big gain in sales, gain in streaming. Radio airplay is still gaining for Sicko Mode. So it all came together this week, right before we think Ariana probably is going to go back to number one next week. But yeah, not entirely unprecedented that Drake and Skrillex wouldn't be credited on a number one hit. We've had number ones in the past where it's pretty obvious that other acts were on there but didn't receive official credit. It seems like it was more of a thing back in the 90s and 80s, even in the 90s. I was thinking back to Take a Bow by Madonna with Babyface singing on there. Mariah Carey, we're talking about her last week on the podcast a lot. Trey Lorenz on I'll Be There. It's kind of a duet, basically. But in the past, contracts maybe weren't as intense as they are now, and it was more common for people just to kind of hang out on songs that provide different guest talents. It's really case by case. It can just be really song by song whether an artist maybe has the legal right to be credited on a song. So I can never really make a blanket statement about it, other than just nowadays we've talked to writers and producers, and we've heard that if you write one line to a song now, you're going to be credited one way or another. In the past, that just wasn't the case.
So Drake technically may not be number one on the Hot 100 this week, but somewhere where he is number one is this year's Hot 100. The song God's Plan is the number one Hot 100 song of the year, which goes nicely with Drake being the number one artist of the year, which, I mean, as we've talked so many times, you know, I feel like a broken record. You could almost just insert a clip from any other week on this show. The massive year he had with Scorpion, breaking the record for most weeks at number one on the Hot 100 by any artist in a calendar year. And as Drake finishes as the top artist of the year, he's actually only the third rap artist to ever get the year in number one spot. Back in 2003 and 2005, 50 Cent doubled up between the success of his albums Get Rich or Die Tryin' and The Massacre. And back in 2002, Nelly was the first person, if you remember how massive a year that was for him, with Hot in Her and Dilemma with Kelly Rowland. So Drake really only the third artist to do that. And of course, back when Nelly and 50 Cent were doing it, that was really probably the last time we saw rap as ubiquitous as it has become in the past few months. So really just goes to show once again that hip-hop is king across all sectors.
Yeah, we had that record streak this year in the Hot 100, 34 straight weeks of rap songs being number one. And actually, rap is back at number one on the Hot 100 this week after 10 weeks of pop being number one for Girls Like You, 7 weeks for Maroon 5, and then 3 weeks for Ariana. So, yeah, after that record streak, pop had a decent run for 10 weeks, but rap back at number one. And, yeah, absolutely, rap's year all the way around, 2018.
Top new artist also goes to a rapper, Cardi B. Now people will say, wait a minute, what? How, you know, yes, Bodak Yellow came out in 2017, was a big hit then, but because it came out so late in the year, it really didn't give her enough time to be considered for a new artist award. So with the success that she had in 2018, all the singles we've seen, everything from I Like It to Finesse and her guest appearances, Motorsport, all that comes together and makes Cardi the top new artist of 2018. I mean, hip-hop is taking over not just in its own domain, but spreading out to pop, to Latin. It's just the flavor of the year.
Not that pop was entirely missing in 2018.
It was out there somewhere. You had to look for it. No, it was you could find it.
The number one album of the year is Reputation by Taylor. So some people might be surprised by that. They might have thought that Drake had it all locked up with Scorpion. But out from the beginning of the year, which helped Taylor Swift's reputation, getting more cumulative points over the year. But we going back to the middle of the year, we did a podcast where Delicate was just coming out. We weren't sure how big that was going to be. Turned out to really be, I think, the single that saved the album. I think it had that number one first single with Look What You Made Me Do, but didn't really hang on in radio too long. Second and third singles just weren't on the level of what Taylor had done before. It feels like Delicate came along, really just added all the consumption points needed to really help Taylor reputation be number one for the year.
Interesting so much for that rollout, because I think, Delicate, maybe it didn't win the war in terms of Hot 100, being a number one or anything like that. But you're right. I think that definitely got the album a second win that it needed to cross the finish line, even though Drake's Scorpion was so massive when it was out in the summertime.
Ed Sheeran also, we're talking about pop, doing really well. Perfect is the number two song of the year on the Hot 100, just below God's Plan. Kind of interesting when you break down the metrics. God's Plan's number one in streaming for the year, but Perfect, number one in airplay and sales. So it won those two battles, but God's Plan streaming numbers just so huge. Drake set the weekly streaming record with In My Feelings later in the year. So streaming is just the metric that's really running everything this year. So being number one in streaming is enough to be number one in the year in Hot 100.
Interesting how we have a sort of a number 1-2 parallel, because Ed Sheeran was number one last year with Shape of You, and now he's number two this year with Perfect, which is actually the same thing that happened in 2016 and 17 when you had Justin Bieber number one in 2016 with Love Yourself, and came in at number two behind Ed Sheeran last year with Despacito. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I guess we can expect Drake to be number two next year. Is that where this is headed?
Who's number one next year?
That's the whoever's number two in 2020. This is how it goes, But just like an odd coincidence I found that I thought was kind of nifty.
Yeah, talking about coincidences, Pablo Nelson, one of our most insightful chart watchers, he wrote in, he noticed, God's Plan's number one on the year in Hot 100. Believer is number 100. So go from Believer to God's Plan, from 100 to 1.
It's amazing what the chart community can come up with.
One more pop. We keep talking about pop angles. Number one song of the year on the pop songs charts. Number 16 for the year on the Hot 100. Dua Lipa, New Rules, record-setting run on pop songs. 45 weeks on the chart, spent 4 weeks at number one. So, maybe you didn't really notice it when you're looking at the year-end Hot 100 at number 16. Most played song of the year on pop radio.
So that is only a brief overview of all the charts that we have on Billboard.com right now. Everything ranging from the top overall categories through all of the genres. We've got country, rock, Latin, R&B, hip-hop, soundtracks, cast albums, whatever you want to find, it's out there. So be sure to just go or play around Billboard.com. There's plenty of links there, and you should be able to find out really any category you want to know what was big this year. We've got it for you, so be sure to check that out.
And when you're done with that, you can go back to this week's charts. The Billboard Holiday 100 chart, as we said, returns. So it's kind of interesting. It's like this alternate universe version of the Hot 100. It's the same data points, the same metrics, streaming, airplay, and sales. It's just for holiday songs only, and holiday songs of all eras. In terms of new holiday songs over on the Adult Contemporary Airplay chart, this has become a tradition too. Unlike the Holiday 100, only new songs can chart each year on the AC chart. So every year, just about for the last, going back to around the early 2000s, there's a new holiday number one every year on the AC chart, or more than one sometimes. So far this year, John Legend has the first one with his version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas featuring Esperanza Spalding. So number one for John Legend and Esperanza Spalding. Katy Perry is actually right behind at number two. So there's a chance that could even take over and become another holiday airplay AC number one next week. But yeah, John Legend continuing that tradition of new holiday songs. So that always kind of brings up a point for people who follow holiday music and radio and kind of wonder, why does radio just play all the older holiday songs? How come every year you you're going to hear all the Andy Williams stuff and Bing Crosby and Gene Autry and all these songs that go decades back? Well, How about we find out more about that and talk to a couple experts at Nielsen, Haley Jones and John Miller. I'm going to bring them in, talking about all things related to holiday music, why adult radio plays all that music. Obviously, ratings are a big part of that. Do they start too early? I know sometimes it's a popular complaint in stores that you hear holiday music, radio too. Well, why does it have to start? Seems sometimes like right after summer ends. So we're going to get into that. Also, how streaming has changed the holiday music landscape. Used to be radio was really the only place you could tell what the most popular songs are by doing research that way. But streaming is a whole new way to see what people want to hear. So we'll get into that as well. All things holiday music. It's that time of the season. So here's Haley Jones and John Miller from Nielsen coming up on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Oh, have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Haley Jones and John Miller, thank you so much for coming on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. There's a lot to get into in terms of adult radio. And I feel like this is really the time of year when people are probably thinking about adult radio more because of the holiday music. And seems to be true. Looking at last holiday season and into this year, Nielsen recently did a seminar about AC radio. And you pointed out that AC is at a high point right now in terms of ratings. When you go back an entire decade, format's never been better in terms of ratings than it is right now.
That's right. And you make that point about holiday music. Every year the holidays come around and AC stations and soft AC stations and others go to the Christmas format where you play the music. And we see these huge spikes in audience, huge interest, huge impact, especially in the weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And last year was the best year we've ever seen for AC going holiday. So one of the things that I often sort of laugh about with Haley is there seems to be, like, every year there's more appetite for holiday music, you know. And say what you want about certain holiday songs and ones you might find annoying and things like that, but every year there's more holiday songs streamed, there's more holiday songs listened to on the radio. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Do you think it's just the momentum itself, as it keeps getting bigger, it just sort of, no pun intended, snowballs?
Great pun. Great pun. I think it's some of that for sure. But there's all kinds of stories. So each year when this happens, people in radio talk about it and people in music talk about it. And we hear a lot of the same sort of themes. You know, people want the holiday distraction and the world we live in today. And you want to click on your Christmas music. I mean, Haley, you were joking before we started the interview that you were going to listen to Christmas music to prep because, you know, Black Friday was the other day. It's time.
Yep.
It's time.
Trying to get in the spirit of things. Yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too. Pop culture wise or society wise, maybe in the last year or so, maybe there is more of a need, more of a wanting for something more comforting, just in terms of everything we're hearing in the news cycle every day.
I I think that's absolutely true. Before John and I do these webinars, we always reach out to program directors just to get the temperature of the water. I mean, we want to make the webinars as useful as possible. So we always ask, like, what are your biggest challenges? How can we help? And the thing I heard from almost every programmer in the AC calls getting prepared for that webinar in particular was they feel like the holiday music is an escape. And it's all about comfort, like home-cooked food almost, right? It's going back to a time when things were simpler. And that's the feeling that they're trying to put across on the air, in between the records, obviously.
Well, there's a reason, Haley, that the top played, and I believe some of the top streamed holiday songs are all the classics. You know, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree and the stuff that's classic that I listened to with my parents growing up. I listened to today with my kids. Yeah, it's the holiday season.
Right.
Yep.
Actually going to get into some of the songs that are being played the most and streamed the most. And there's actually some different lists there. And are there some holiday hits that maybe radio could take advantage of in terms of how well they're streaming? One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, as AC ratings continue to grow, when you look at it in relation to formats that it's related to, mainstream top 40 pop, mm-hmm. and adult top 40, adult pop, with mainstream top 40, adult top 40, and AC kind of all related, just in terms of one being a little bit hotter than the other as we go from each one. What's interesting is if you look back, you guys did some research over the past 3 years. If we go back to around this time of the year in 2015, mainstream top 40 was in the lead among adult top 40, mainstream top 40, and AC, with the two AC versions, AC and Hot AC, fairly distant, tied after that. But if you go to this year, now AC and Pop, they're pretty much tied just about in first place, and Hot AC is third. So basically, AC has risen up to match top 40 pop ratings in just 3 years. So what do you think is behind just 3 years, which really isn't a long time when you look overall, that the AC has caught up to top 40 in terms of ratings?
That's a good characterization. And Haley, I'll answer first. From a ratings trend standpoint, you're exactly correct. You know, what we call POP, CHR, that's the technical format name we use at Nielsen, but it's your top 40. That format has been trending down somewhere like 15% down the last 3 or 4 years. AC has gone up, and you're exactly right. In some ranks, some demos, AC ranks ahead now of pop, which was not the case for a long time. So that's how the formats have moved in the past few years. And we were talking earlier about holiday, you know, so that record setting holiday we saw last year, the holiday 2017, sort of springboarded AC into a great 2018. You know, this has been the best year for the format that we've seen in a long time. And Haley, you probably have some thoughts about the music cycle, but that's what we're seeing from a format standpoint around the country.
Yeah, definitely. As far as the music cycle, I mean, AC radio's changed a lot, right? I mean, maybe 10 years ago, John, do you think that's when the change really started? Maybe
probably
a decade ago, maybe not even quite a decade ago, but it used to be more Bryan Adams and Phil Collins. And today, AC sounds a lot like a pop radio station, only they're not taking as many risks as pop radio is. So they're waiting till songs are already established hits before they start playing them. So they really get to play the cream of the crop. They're not playing as many rhythmic records, so it's not quite as divisive, maybe, as other formats might be. It's just the most mass appeal songs that they possibly can play. It's become a lot more contemporary in the last few years, and I think that's part of its success. Coincidentally, at the same time, pop is having some challenges because I personally think it's twofold. As more and more of those mass appeal records are shared across other formats, I think it gives listeners an opportunity to go maybe to AC to get their pop fill instead of getting it from a pop radio station. But also, pop is still the format that's, it's about new music. I mean, pop, we always call it top 40. I mean, and in the 70s, top 40 meant playing literally the top 40 songs kind of over and over again. And pop, for better or worse, hasn't necessarily embraced hip hop's evolution. I mean, hip hop, you know, as far as consumption goes in the music world, really is making a significant impact. I mean, if you look at the streams so far this year, I think hip hop is like 40% of all streams. Now, that number that I'm throwing out, by the way, I should say, is from our mid-year report. So I'm curious to see what it ends up looking like at the year-end report, which is due out here in a few weeks. But I suspect it's going to be significant. It's been significant for a few years, and pop isn't necessarily embracing that. I don't know. I don't know that they should be embracing that. I don't know that they shouldn't be embracing that. But if pop's role is to play what's popular, then hip hop appears to be more popular, than how pop radio is supporting it. I'll just say that.
One of the things, Haley, I noticed in terms of the library, it's being played at AC from some of the research you guys did. There's a lot of 80s. There's a lot of 2010s. Am I right in saying that the 90s are maybe not quite as representative? And yeah, maybe that's because the 80s were really melodic. 2010s have kind of gone back in some level, whereas the 90s were a little more guitar-based, maybe not. Maybe it hasn't held up as well nowadays as music is a little bit more synthesizer-driven like it was in the 80s.
I think that's true. And pop music had a little bit of a better decade for pop music was really the 80s versus the 90s. And the 90s have struggled across a lot of formats, not just pop and AC. I mean, I remember, I'm a not so former programmer coming more from the alternative and AAA world, and 90s music just kind of had a rough time with a few exceptions, right? The exceptions being the Pearl Jam and Nirvana's of the world. But really, to get too deep into the 90s just didn't resonate as much as, say, the 70s or 80s. And we see that in AC also.
In the 90s in particular, you would think maybe besides the urban records or the rock-based records, I mean, a lot of pop that when people think, I guess, 90s pop is teen pop. And maybe, you know, it just has that a weird young sound that you almost can't escape even when, you know, Britney and Justin and everybody's grown up. There's still something about those particular records that as they were crafted to be, have a really teen appeal to them.
True. It's interesting. I should go, and it's an exercise I haven't done, but I'm kind of curious just to go compare 90s streaming numbers to 90s airplay numbers as far as pop and AC music goes. And that's an exercise I haven't done, but I'm curious. I feel like I'm really a student of the changing music world. And for me, John hears this all the time, but I'm always, as streaming grows, as sales decline, I think there really are some pretty fascinating trends we can start to see. As far as studying music that streams. And there are a lot of surprises when we really start to compare radio. If you work in radio for a long time, I've done it too. I think you start to make these assumptions that, well, the 90s don't do well. They're just one example. Well, so I'm not going to research a lot of those songs. And that may or may not be true. There are certainly some pop culture hits. I mean, that's something that we see in the streaming all the time. You know, radio gets used to, well, these songs work and these songs don't. And with pop culture hits, I don't know, Eminem has a couple. And I'm having trouble grasping like a good 90s pop example at the moment. Yeah, actually, Backstreet Boys, probably a great pop example. People assume, radio programmers assume, that those songs don't really work on the radio. Yet when you look at the streaming numbers, they exponentially outperform how they're getting played on the radio. And that might be a good, sometimes it's songs that were never even singles to begin with. Songs that just were picked up in a commercial, songs that get played at basketball games or other sporting events, or you know, they stream millions of streams week after week after week after week. So I think that the streaming data really is good fodder for radio programmers to go back and sort of see, hey, are there some songs that we're missing? And I suspect we could find some in the 90s if we looked.
Yeah, that's a trend we keep coming back to. Programmers being open-minded, as streaming is just a whole new avenue of research. We've talked to a lot of pop programmers when it comes to just because all these hip-hop hits are streaming so well, does that mean we should be playing them? Sounds like similar kind of thing for AC in terms of, are there hits that maybe years or decades ago we never would have considered playing, but as the format is playing more new music and artists from this decade, yeah, maybe there are things to freshen up AC that they never realized.
I could not agree with you more. And I think AC programmers might have been a little slower to really start studying those trends because they feel traditionally their audiences have been a little bit older than the pop audience. So again, the assumption there, and probably partially true, by the way, is that those audiences were a little bit slower to start using streaming as opposed to their younger counterparts.
They may have been, but the counterpoint to that is I think things are catching up. You know, the data that we see, right, from your side of the Nielsen house, Haley, about streaming growth in markets, you know, and we're looking at smaller places. You know, streaming has been used very heavily in big population areas for a while now, but we're noticing things like smaller markets, you know, the Des Moines, Iowas of the world are, you know, streaming is growing exponentially there. So things are catching up, you know, the abundance of audio, smart speakers, smartphones, cars, you know, the availability to everybody now, young, old, rural, urban, of finding streaming and music is really unprecedented.
Agree.
I'm so lost without you. I know you were right, believing for so long. I'm all out of love.
Recent trend that just happened and kind of in a whole bunch, and there's been these stations around for a while, but when you see sign-ons in the same format all of a sudden in big markets, we feel like it's something to talk about. Chicago, Detroit, some other markets recently just signed on these stations called Breeze, which are really soft AC. So this isn't just Taylor Swift and Adele and Ed Sheeran. You tell me what artists are key, but what is this new, sort of new, suddenly at least it's back in the spotlight, this new Breeze format of soft AC? Who are the artists who are driving it, and why, again, do you think it's all of a sudden become sort of a new thing? Does it go back to that comfort level that a lot of listeners are looking for?
I'll start with explaining some of the artists, and Jonna, I want you to jump in here too, mm-hmm. On the ratings part. Some of the core artists, by the way, remember earlier we were saying that we felt like AC had changed and become a lot more contemporary. I really think these soft AC stations are somewhat of a flashback to how AC was more wholly before they started making these changes. So core artists on a soft AC station today: Phil Collins, Billy Joel, Whitney Houston, Madonna, Michael Jackson, Air Supply, Adele might still be a part of that, Elton John, Chicago, those kinds of artists, just those older music, Lionel Richie or Foreigner or Bryan Adams, I think is the artist that I brought up earlier. It's 0% new music and all old music, whereas the more contemporary AC stations are playing, you know, 10-15% new music these days. So they're both gold based, really, but you're not getting new songs on the Breeze.
And we call that the soft AC format. That's how we identify it at Nielsen. So it's different, you know, from just AC. But the soft AC format, while small, is growing, as you mentioned. There's new sign-ons happening right now, kind of going more towards that throwback sound that Haley was just describing. But from an audience standpoint, what's really interesting about soft AC stations is they definitely skew older. They skew significantly older than hot AC and somewhat older than AC. And so there's that to consider too in the long run. I was reading a really great column just now by Fred Jacobs about the demographic cliff, you know, and it seems like every major radio format goes through this every couple years. You know, classic rock talks about it and classic hits talks about it, you know, being over the 54-year-old cliff and the media buys and all that stuff. So what's really interesting about soft AC is you know, owners are getting behind it. Radio broadcasters are putting it on in major markets. It's starting to get ratings. So we'll see. You know, we'll see over time, does that change the audience, or is it appealing to the people that are 65 plus and 55 plus? And then down the road, you know, what happens to that from a sales perspective? Can you monetize that? And that's a whole other discussion for another podcast. I won't go there today. Yeah. But that's what's really interesting about watching Soft AC come on.
And I'll use one. I just want to jump in and use one market as an example here. San Francisco, just because that's where I am and that's sort of home base for me. You know, we have a legendary adult contemporary station here that's just done well for many, many, you know, over 20 years, called Koi. And Koi is today more contemporary AC, you know, still a pretty conservative AC, if you will. But they have a new competitor. iHeart signed on KISQ, which really does fit into this soft AC mold that we're talking about. And it's done really well. In some cases, it's even beat quite. I won't say it's beat quite consistently, but it's definitely giving a quite a run for the money. So, and by the way, it's doing that even in the 2554 sort of all important demo that advertisers are buying. So I suspect, you know, the radio community always studying what does well across the country, that KISQ has certainly been one of the stations that they're following.
I think part of it is this music has just been absent from radio for so long. It's mainstream AC wasn't playing Air Supply and stuff like that. And classic hit stations, it was just considered a little too soft. So I'm sure it's benefiting from people here, you know, Christopher Cross and stuff like that in the radio. And after so long, I mean, these are great songs. They still are. It sounds really fresh. I'm sure it's kind of perking people's ears when they hear these songs for the first time in a long time on radio.
Yeah, radio goes through this. Classic hip hop was a thing, is still a thing, is still played, right? That started 5-6 years ago. Yeah, it's the cyclical nature of it. If there's a hole, if there's music that's not being consumed, is there an opportunity there for radio? And Haley, you know, it's the thing we were talking about a few minutes ago about, you know, how do these songs stream versus how are they played? I think there's some very interesting things to be learned over the next year as these stations start playing this. And then we watch, is that affecting the streaming consumption? I don't know.
Right.
Very interesting to watch.
Well, you know, if history repeats itself, and it usually does, we see cases where radio really does drive streaming, but also a few cases where streaming drives radio. So we see both. So I suspect that you'll see Air Supply, you know, as an example, streams go up in these markets where these new breed stations are signing on.
And a lot of these acts still tour really well, too. Air Supply is touring. Billy Joel, obviously, when he plays at Madison Square Garden. So clearly there's an appeal for them. So it doesn't seem like maybe it's the biggest risk to have that on the radio.
Good point. Mm-hmm. And to my comment earlier, you know, just because people are above the age of 55 doesn't mean they don't have money to spend, and alpha boomers and that whole thing. The wealthiest generation in the history of humanity is that generation. So whenever we hear that thing about, can you monetize it and should you put a format on that specifically goes after, you know, the older audience, what does that mean for your sales? There's always those things to consider too.
Santa, tell me if you're really there. Don't make me fall in love again if you won't be here next year. Santa, tell me.
All right, you're talking about holiday songs and what radio plays and what radio doesn't play and what's streaming. And saying how holiday music, you know, really all about comfort and that family tradition of hearing the same songs that previous generations heard. But you guys have looked into holiday hits that are played the most versus what are streamed the most. You came up with some interesting cases of seems like there are some big holiday streaming hits that radio probably could be playing, and really not that surprising. When you look at their album sales, how big acts like Pentatonix have been, Ariana Grande. Certainly there are some new holiday hits out there that might wind up making their way over to radio, considering how well they're streaming.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think as more and more programmers really do start to embrace the streaming data, we'll see a shift. I think we'll see a shift this year. You mentioned Pentatonix. Pentatonix is definitely probably the biggest story, just because they have multiple songs that really outperform in streaming versus how they get played on the radio. But Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber has a holiday record. Sia, song, Santa's Coming for Us, that does extraordinarily well. You know, the streaming, the holiday streaming period really is 6 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks long. So when you start to see, you know, 25 million streams nationally across a 6 week period, I really think that's something to pay attention to. But also worth noting when we're looking at streaming, I always find this interesting, and I didn't talk about this in the webinar, but when you look at the most streamed holiday song last year, Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. Now, this is a song that does really well on the radio too, but I just want to point out it had almost 141 million streams in that 5 week period last year, versus song number two, as far as streaming, which is Brenda Lee, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, which had 60 million. So, I just think Mariah Carey, it's interesting to me that that song is so strong in streaming.
That's a gap.
There's a big gap. There's a big gap, but also, Jose Feliciano, is the most played holiday song. And when I look at this, I'm like, how could, like, radio should definitely play Mariah Carey more when you're talking about 141 million streams in a 5 week period. I just think it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, you're looking at Pentatonix's Hallelujah streams really well, but doesn't get a lot of radio play. Pentatonix's Mary Did You Know, Oh Come All You Faithful. We mentioned Ariana Grande, Santa Tell Me. Bieber's Mistletoe was one of them. We mentioned the Sia song. That was interesting. Your list of biggest streaming hits for the holidays, that maybe radio is missing, a couple of real classics that, yeah, maybe could maybe you hear them on radio, but maybe looking at the streams could be even bigger. Eartha Kitt, Santa Baby, and Chuck Berry, Run Rudolph Run. Those are going back more than a couple of generations.
Yes, definitely. I love to see Chuck Berry doing so well in streaming, and I personally wouldn't mind hearing it more on the radio, but I think people hear that more as that rock sound, and again make assumptions that that song, you know, it's getting some airplay. So you can see the radio rank was like 77th of all songs, but that's a huge difference compared to the streaming rank.
Do you think that, sort of going back to the question of assumptions and escapism, do you think in particular when we're looking at some of these songs that especially in the past recent years have been big hits with the Pentatonix, the Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, do you think there's a bias there that some programmers may think, you know, you've got to sort of walk this line between, as we mentioned, people want to hear the classics, the Brenda Lees, the songs they've heard that really get them into the holiday spirit. But, you know, on one hand, you may think, well, if I'm going to play Ariana Grande and Justin Bieber, people can just hear that on top 40 all the time. They don't want to hear that at this point of year. So do you think that that sort of works against some of these new songs in that way, that these artists are still major top 40 forces?
Yes. When it comes to holiday music, I think you're probably right. I mean, listen, if you're a radio programmer, a lot of their playlists all year long is very well researched, right? I mean, I don't know many or any stations that actually have a budget to go and research their holiday music, just because, again, it's on the air for 5 or 6 weeks. And it's not probably their primary focus, or maybe they had a budget to go research these holiday titles, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, and they're still sort of getting their money's worth out of that test that they did so long ago. And, you know, add to that I feel like a lot of, especially AC programmers, weren't necessarily using the streaming data and using that as a tool in making their programming decisions. But I feel like that's shifting. I mean, it's been shifting slowly, but I feel like as the streaming numbers continue to grow exponentially, and things like the webinars, I think, help, and hopefully more and more programmers are starting to take this data into consideration, that we're going to see that change. That's my thought. Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I just feel like based on the sheer tonnage of the streaming numbers, it's impossible to ignore.
There's a place for both. Yeah, Haley, I'm sitting here listening to you talk. I'm looking at, there's a screen we did, it was an era map, where, you know, across the bottom of the page is the years. And so it shows you, you know, what years the songs are made and how much they're played. And there's a spike in the 50s and 60s. That's the classics. But there's a lot of action in the 90s and today. So going back to your question, that there's, you know, the streaming data says there's room for both. And that's where I think the uniqueness of a programmer and a station, and each holiday station has its own kind of thing going on. You know, they're going to figure out what works for them, the right mix, you know, how much classic versus new. So that's part of the beauty of programming it.
I think what's interesting about holiday music on AC is it maybe the format, at least for those 6 weeks or so, where there's just the greatest established competition of maybe any radio format at all, because you're going from Gala Peavy, I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas, to something brand new by Pentatonix or Ariana Grande. You're dealing with just, you know, 7, 8, 9 decades of music. So to get in there for new music, you're kind of facing more competition than you would maybe on any other radio formats, which makes it really fun to listen to. You can go from, you know, a song from the 20s to 90 years later, but it's almost like a Hall of Fame induction. How do you possibly put a brand new song up against something that's been established for, you know, over 75 years?
Good point. Very good point.
One more question that always comes up, because it seems like people do generally like to complain about everything holiday related starts too early, whether it's as soon as we get past Labor Day, we're hearing about Christmas, and radio starts playing holiday music now before Thanksgiving. Sometimes even as early as September, we hear about the first sign-ons in certain markets, although it's really more once we get into November. But for the people who wonder, why does radio play holiday music a month so early before Christmas? Ratings prove it, that people do want to hear it, right? They wouldn't be doing this if listeners didn't say, yeah, we want to be hearing this. We're ready for it.
They do. And what the data says is that the window for bringing in new audience, you know, we call it the Q window, that's basically Thanksgiving to Christmas. So people go earlier than Thanksgiving, and that's great, and that's fine. And stations have reasons for doing that. You know, they have the brand of it. They stunt it, whatever you want to say. But the growth that we see is generally between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. And what I mean by that is on December 26th, the number is much lower, right? It is people want their holiday music up until and on Christmas Day. And then, you know, we all shift and go back into new things. But that's what the data says over time.
All right, we're still in early December, so if you're already tired of Christmas music, you got to pace yourself. You still got
you got a couple weeks to go.
Plenty of time.
A couple weeks to go.
Oh, this is great. Haley, yeah. John, thank you so much. Love to have you guys back on going forward. I know you do different formats throughout the year. It's not always just AC. You do cover pretty much every format. So as you do more of this, I'd love to have you back on, give other insights about all things radio and streaming and how it relates to the charts. Happy holidays. Happy holiday music.
That's good.
Nights are getting shorter, no hot chocolate. Fills the air and Christmas cheer does too. Picking out your Christmas tree so loudly. The joy this time it brings to you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. We talked a little bit about the Hot 100 Song of the Year for 2018, which is Drake's God's Plan. Once again, if you missed that, we're going to focus exclusively on that category for the next 2 weeks. We're going to look at all the Hot 100 number ones for the year, going way back to the 50s. So next week, join us. We'll walk through the little bit of the 50s that we have, and the 60s, 70s, and 80s, going through each year and the song that topped the year-end chart.
Yeah, and it can be sort of an element of, it could be a little fluky, maybe just a one-hit wonder, just came out and had the biggest song of a year. But Beach Boys are on this list, Beatles, Wings as well, so McCartney each way, The Police, Prince, Wham, and George Michael.
To your point that some of these artists maybe only were hot for one moment in their career, but when they were hot, they were on fire.
So, some really huge songs and big artists as well. And we have a special guest, too, not in that one-hit wonder category, a band that had
has had so many hits over the years, multiple number ones. They had a number one song of the year. We're going to talk to the lead singer of the band when that song hit number one. And it's kind of interesting. We're saying
it's not Paul McCartney, so don't, you know.
We were talking about it. We already chatted the interview, and he said he was.
We're talking to Beyonce.
I said he.
Damn.
We were talking, and he said he was kind of surprised at how big it was because driving around, he never heard the song. He didn't. He was.
We're talking to Paul Simon.
He was surprised it was a number one song, and even more so to be the number one song of the year that it led. So
we're talking to Sting.
You'll have to listen next week to find out.
Gary. All right. Well, we'll see you then. Be sure to join us next week. Enjoy the week, everybody. And as always, we have to close with what's an appropriate song to wrap this up with.
Yeah, I thought here's a song that kind of ties in a lot of different things we've been talking about this week and something we talk about all the time. So Mariah was our focus last week. We did Mariah Carey's 20 biggest Hot 100 hits. I always stand for Mariah. You, Whitney Houston. So remember, 20 years ago, there was a hit, When You Believe, that combined Mariah and Whitney vocal talents. I think we both know who sang it better.
There is no discussion to be had at all.
But the song's actually back on Billboard's charts via a remake. And one of the acts that we were talking about before, Pentatonix, they have remade When You Believe with Maren Morris. So kind of a daunting thing to try to take on what Whitney and Mariah did. But Pentatonix, obviously known for their vocals, they can handle it on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.